The Guardian.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Today, Brokeback Mountain style Premier League finale, as despite the Spurs digging deep, Arsene gets the climax he was looking for and leaves Andre's chaps undone. Pot asks, what's on the shopping list, Mr. Wenger, and was that the worst Mariner performance since that fella ate an albatross? Elsewhere, a weekend of goodbyes and one very good low knee. Lukaku, star of that 10-goal madness at the Hawthorns. There's Sid on the Copa del Rey and continental coaches on the move. Italy's top three tussle, playoffs, pigs' heads, love for the Glovers and more in today's Football Weekly. Wow, can't believe the season's almost done. But here we are, here we are. Thinking back to 9 months ago when I was sat here with fresh-faced Barry Glendinning.
Hello.
If you'd only known.
Yeah. I've aged a lot. Yeah, we've nothing left now.
Nothing left.
Apart from the Confederations Cup, the European Under-21s, right. The Ladies, Euros.
The Ladies. Champions League. Champions League.
Oh, in the summer.
Well, it's going to happen on Saturday.
Oh, of course, yes. Yeah, and yeah. The Championship Playoff Final.
And the Championship Playoff Final. Yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing. Paul, what
and
are you
the Emirates,
do?
The Emirates Cup, there'll be something like that Emirates at some Cup. Point, won't there?
Well, 14. Also there's Chelsea, Man City twice over in the US of A.
So really, no football all summer.
Amy, Copa Libertadores.
How are you coping?
Missing it already.
All right then, because you got a big Never. Grin on your face, Amy Lawrence, because your Gunners have only gone and done it again.
Yeah, I mean, I was in
Don't
this
be
very
modest,
pod.
Amy.
Yeah, well, all right then. You don't mean to
they
be
had
modest.
An quietly, they really came together in the second half of the season. The way the season started, RVP's gone, but they've done as well, if not better. Are they arguably in a better place now than they were this time last year?
I don't know about that, but if you look at the table, they're 3 points better off and with a superior goal difference of 10 more than last season. So Wenger felt very smug, I think, in a way, just to point to those statistics, because losing Van Persie, that wasn't really anticipated. Last season with Van Persie, he was there. I think their only player who got into double figures in the Premier League. And this season, the men largely bought to replace him. Collectively, the idea was that they would compensate for this loss. Podolski, Giroud, Cazorla and also Walcott all got quite comfortably into double figures this year. Mm. So they've managed to actually spread that particular load. The other thing was for Marlon going out the side and Koscielny emerging to develop a quite decent partnership with Mertesacker, and I think Koscielny's probably been Arsenal's best player over the last couple of months.
Wouldn't you know it was him who scored the goal as
Wouldn't
well?
Wouldn't you know? Mm. Aaron Ramsey coming in with Wilshere being injured and picking up quite nicely with Arteta in central midfield has given Arsenal sort of surprising solidity and the kind of solidity that didn't look remotely possible.
I mean, is that the biggest change from last season, the biggest improvement, is that actually it's looking more cohesive defensively than it has done for some time?
Yeah, but that took a while. What's interesting for Arsenal is what they do now. I mean,
it's a platform for growth. But are they going to grow? Are they going to build on that platform?
But this is there's three factors, I think, that are really interesting. One is that Wenger has 1 year left on his contract. Ooh. Factor two is that they've got a lot more money than they've ever had. And Ooh. Although they're not exactly in a position to compete with the Chelsea's and Man City's and PSG's and so on, there's big new deals coming in for their kit deal and for sponsorship of the shirt. So in theory, they're supposed to be kind of not far off £200 million better than they have been in recent years.
Who's going to be all over their shirt then?
I think it's a new deal with Emirates.
Oh, okay.
But they're just paying a lot more money.
Oh, nice.
And there's stories of Puma doing their kit.
But yet, all this money is coming in and it's about to change, but yet the players he's being linked with in the rumours are all these under-21 French internationals.
But that's exactly why it's so intriguing. I think the Arsenal board have been begging Wenger in recent transfer windows to be a bit bolder in the transfer market, and he's so resistant to it.
All right, lovely tweet here from Jeff Arsenal, who points out that if you'd bet a Spurs fan 50p back in 1995 that Arsenal would finish above them and then let the bet roll double or quits each year from then, that Spurs fan would now owe you £131,072. Amazing. Barry, you were there doing a groundbreaking world first double minute by minute.
Yeah.
Did you adopt different voices in a kind of vaguely...
Well, I just typed the Tottenham Sunderland minute by minute with my left hand and the Arsenal Newcastle one. All right.
Brilliant.
No, it was a James Dart innovation. He'd say, you know, so you know the way in Match of the Day they kind of show the highlights from both matches.
Yeah.
you know, splice them all together. So I was supposed to be doing something like that, but I think it just ended up with me not really doing either of them very
right.
well.
You were helped out by the fact that there was singularly little going on in both games for much of them, although...
Yeah, I think if the goals had been flying in, I'd have been in all sorts of bother, but because there was only one goal to report, I didn't struggle too badly. It was
right.
okay.
How about that moment when the Spurs fans thought Newcastle had scored?
I don't know how these rumours start, but... They were overjoyed,
text.
And then the look on their little faces when they realised they'd been had or duped. Well, it was quite funny for everyone else, obviously, but not for them. You know, Spurs were 7 points clear of Arsenal with 10 games to go this season, so it's their own fault they haven't finished fourth. But I have a certain amount of sympathy for them. They've had a great season. Apart from that run in which they stumbled a bit, they finished with their highest ever points. Premier League points total is still wasn't enough to get them in. They're now in this...
This was their highest ever in the Premier League, was it?
Yeah, 72. They're now in this tricky sort of limbo where they're in the Europa League, which is going to affect their chances of breaking into the top four next season. And I think their best hope of doing is, and also Arsenal's best hope of progressing, is the fact that the three teams that finished above Arsenal are all going to have new managers next season, so things might not go so well for them.
I mean, I think that's it, just like the Europa League run impacted on Newcastle. I think it's had a very strong effect on what's happened to Spurs this season. They were playing, and the fixture list as well, they ended up playing two games every week and against a very high standard of opposition consistently, and they didn't have a squad big enough to cope with that in the end. But they got 11 points against the top four in the season, and Arsenal only got one. So they were doing something right. But
Andre Mariner at the weekend, no? What a shocker he had.
Yeah, I mean, Spurs haven't got a penalty all season. Which is astonishing. Gareth Bale has been incorrectly booked for diving on, I think, four occasions. And yesterday he was very hard done by Andre Mariner, Seb Larsson, who was playing as an improvised full-back and sort of struggled in that position, quite clearly hauled him to the ground. And from a distance about 40, 50 yards away, where he couldn't have possibly have had a clear view, Mariner decided Bale had dived, and I presume it's a case of the boy who cried wolf, and he did go to ground a bit theatrically, but there's absolutely no question he was hauled to the ground. Should have been a penalty, didn't get one. And then Carlos Cuellar handled the ball, that should have been a penalty, Spurs didn't get one, and there was a situation where Jack Colback handled the ball, that was more 50-50, less clear cut. But that could have been a penalty too. So, you know, there's a case that they should have had three penalties yesterday.
Yeah, which would have put the pressure on Arsenal, of course, up at St. James's. Amy, you had a different point you were going to make, I think.
On the Europa League, I mean, when you look at how that's impacted on it makes it very difficult to sustain a challenge domestically and deal with all that extra load. It's almost, you wonder if it's a slight vicious circle for Spurs. I mean, they've got a good platform to make progress. If they can add to the squad, they've obviously made great strides this season. And I think it's not a given that Bale is going to go just because they didn't make the Champions League. And Tottenham have quite a good history of standing quite firm and definitely keeping players who are coveted elsewhere for quite substantial bids for, you know, managing to at least get one more season as they did out of Modric. But, you know, you just fear a little bit for them that next season you could end up with the same situation of, unless they can get the quality and the bodies in to sustain the two, you know, domestic and...
I think the one thing you might find at Spurs, if they keep Vespers, which looks incredibly, you know, likely set that he will, they did have a tricky first 6 weeks of the season when they were bedding into his tactics, bedding in new keeper, etc. And with a bit of luck, they ought to be able to start next season at the pace they look to continue.
The only thing I don't understand about Spurs is just why they didn't buy a centre forward in January.
Right.
I mean, I know there weren't necessarily that many available, but it would have made a you can't help but feel it would have made a big difference.
Barry, in the meantime, Sunderland, what's going on there?
Yeah, after
careful now.
Pardon?
I said careful now.
Yeah, well, after the game yesterday, Paolo Di Canio did an extraordinary press conference. I think it was 24 minutes long, in which he spoke of the various malaises and ills which have sort of infecting the club, promised a big clear out. Phil Bardsley was dropped yesterday from the squad, during the week. I think it was the night of Arsenal's game against Wigan. He and some friends, including Matthew Kilgallen and assorted other Sunderland players, went out for dinner, watched the game, and then went to a casino where Bardsley was filmed or had pictures taken lying on the ground covered in 50s. And then Di Canio insinuated that he was very hungover, quite clearly very hungover the next day, although Bardsley denies he'd been drunk. And made the decision to drop him even before he'd seen the picture.
But Di Canio is saying this is basically widespread. This is everyone but the keeper basically is just living not what they call an athlete's life.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's the case or not, but their performances would suggest that plenty of them aren't. I mean, the number of Sunderland players who've come out of the season with any credit, you could count on the
fingers of
one hand.
Let's open those envelopes, Barry. Who's in the have emerged with credits envelope?
Danny Rose, okay. Who is no longer a Sunderland player because he was only on loan from Spurs. And it is a sort of damning indictment that the club's best player, outfield player anyway, doesn't even play for the... or isn't actually a member of the club. They're on loan from someone else. Simon Mignolet, the goalkeeper, has been excellent throughout the season. I mean, I looked at the lineups, Spurs and Sunderland lineups, before the game yesterday, and I genuinely thought Sunderland might lose by double figures because, man for man, there wasn't a single player in the Sunderland starting 11 that would have got within an ass's roar as the Tottenham team, apart from Mignolet, perhaps, who's I'd say is about as good as Lloris, but not better. Now, they did have injuries, and Bardsley was out because of his misbehaviour, but they're basically a championship side playing in the Premier League, I think, and they're very, very lucky they didn't get relegated.
All right, well.
And I actually think relegation wouldn't have done them any harm.
Hmm?
Is this like the new planking for footballers, kind of taking photos with massive amounts of cash? You know, there was the guy who wiped his ass with loads of 20s, and then
nicely put.
The reserve keeper who was in the bath smoking in a bath full of £20 notes.
I didn't see that one.
Yeah,
someone should do a calendar.
It's catching on. Well, yeah, you'd only need 12.
But that's
the thing
true.
Is, Bardsley wasn't actually covered with that much money.
Right.
It was a very threadbare
was
money
well, there were
duvet.
50s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nearly
yeah.
a grand.
Yeah.
But I, yeah.
If you're going to do it, go out big. No?
Go 50s, yeah.
Go 50s.
Is 50 the highest note?
I believe it is that I've ever seen, certainly.
And for a foreign.
There was a film about
£100.
€100, you see, that's what you
yeah.
do.
Yeah.
But yeah, it makes me uneasy seeing these young lads out in casinos and. Early hours.
What are you doing in casinos early hours?
Pardon?
No, nothing.
No, I haven't set foot in a casino in years.
Of course, perhaps it's better they're doing that than chopping the heads off pigs to wrap in their teammates' clothes, or making like a departing manager and leaving their number twos in the dressing room, as we saw in the extraordinary Amex playoff thingy-me-doo-da with Brighton and Crystal Palace.
And is that confirmed, the link between
Well, that was the email that Gus Poyet sent to the... yeah.
But and didn't he?
What a great team talk you've just given the opposition.
But it wasn't him that did it.
Well, I don't know that. I don't think
didn't he?
You can't dust for number two.
But you could take a kind of sample of the bacteria.
You certainly could. I don't know if they've done that. But no, I think the implication is that he was enraged that someone had done that. Because
oh, yeah,
of course
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
But I loved his email. It was great.
I wonder if Crystal Palace did it, you know, if it's that great a motivational thing. Maybe they did it themselves.
It was Ollie.
Oh, yeah. We've taken a dump on the floor. Let's go get him. Maybe we should... No, all right. Anyway, okay, super. Well, that's probably it for part one. Our part number two is coming up actually very, very shortly, full of all sorts of meaningless but utterly brilliant games. Yeah, lots of other games. You know, the pressure was off. The boys came out to play, and boy, did they play this weekend. I'm thinking of maybe, you know, West Brom, the 5-5, Amy. How exciting was that?
It was great, and I loved the look on Alex Ferguson's face at the end when he just couldn't help himself but look absolutely furious for about 2 seconds before he realised that he needed to break into a magnanimous smile and go and embrace Steve Clarke. But no, it was great fun, and I think probably the most interesting thing that comes out of all of that is when you look at Lukaku, who I think his Premier League goals tally in the end is 17. Above the likes of Aguero and Tevez and Rooney this season, amongst others. And I'm just intrigued to see what Chelsea do with him now, because there is an obvious school of thought that would suggest that Mourinho would look at him and think, well, can I mould you into another Drogba?
Yeah.
And, he, you know, he sort of has so many of the qualities that could be the sort of powerful battering ram.
Yeah, is it naive to think why are they out there looking for mega strikers, as you say, when they have a player with such potential? They're, you know.
But that's exactly the use of the word potential is the key to it all.
Has he now passed the potential?
Do they trust him enough on the basis of that season to say, okay, you're going to be our focal point and we will let you develop to be the top Champions League quality player here at Chelsea?
It would be quite amusing if that were the case after what's happened to Fernando Torres these past few months, where he's like finally found his mojo again, be able to play in a Chelsea setup, and then next season it's like, actually, mate, we want to go back to what we know works, which is getting a big man in there and powering through.
I mean, how much more does Lukaku have to do to prove himself worthy of a regular place? Pardon?
Another season of goals, so you prove it's not a fluke.
Yeah, but I don't think it's anything.
Why is two seasons better than one?
Because it's kind of, what is it? There's some kind of Ben Goldacre term for it, but more evidence you get, then the more likely it is to be true.
Right, regression to the mean is usually what Jonathan Wilson says around this point in the conversation. That might be
I'll go with that.
Okay.
But he's just so impressive. He's like Drogba, but without the bad bits.
Yeah.
You know, the diving and the play acting and
the flip-flops.
And the thing is, he missed quite an easy chance yesterday, and that'll bug him. You know, I remember he scored two, I think, against Reading. That game I was at, I was blathering on about earlier this season. And afterwards, rather than talk up the two goals he scored, he was genuinely gutted that he'd missed three quite scorable chances that would have sort of given West Brom the win. You know, I believe he's not a drinker. You won't see him lying on the floor of the casino covered in money. And yeah, he sounds like, you know, I think he'd be an asset to any team.
When you think about the whole strategy of loans, and it's sometimes controversial, but this is really a case of it being such a perfect loan deal for both clubs, and it's been worked out really well for Chelsea, really well for West Brom, and really well for the player.
It's problematic for West Brom next season, though, if they don't get him back again, because it's a big hole to fill, and expectations will have risen as a result of this season.
Absolutely right. Oh, Darren Bent.
Yes.
Darren Bent.
Nice finish.
Very. And that was his first game since when? September.
Yeah, since the beginning of
it's
the
extraordinary
season.
That was the big controversy at the start of the season. Why can't Darren Bent? He's not even in the squad. Has he done something really, really terrible Lambert?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was more like Lambert had a plan for the way he wanted to play, and it wasn't involving somebody hanging on the shoulder of the last defender. It was
a
pivot around the number nine.
Right.
And he had Benteke.
Well, yeah, Lambert got a lot of grief from the assorted media, and probably in the pod as well. I was trying to remember, were we giving him grief for not playing Bent? And I can't remember. But yeah, he was completely justified in leaving him out by the performances.
Nice to know he's still got it, though, Bent. You know, and maybe a move to pastures new in the summer, and possibly that'll be true for Martinez as well. A lot of people saying that Everton's done deal. I've no idea if that's the case or not.
Alan Hansen seemed to be saying it with a lot of certitude on the television, so that's that confirmed.
Barry, what's the rumour situation on that?
I have no idea.
Good. Okay.
I was just curious to know, actually, at what point yesterday did, say, Ferguson and Moyes' tenure as manager end? Is it exactly on the final whistle, or would Ferguson have gone in and rollicked his players out of it for their shambolic second-half defensive performance, or would he have just gone, it's David Moyes' problem now, see... I don't know, Barry.
According to the Sun newspaper this morning, he did issue an injunction to the players never to call him boss again. So perhaps at that point in time, he ceded.
All right. Well, in other entertaining final day potential goodbyes, Andy Carroll, the terrific performance in West Ham's 4-2 win over Reading. And how about Norwich with a 3-2 win away at Man City, the outgoing champions?
About £4 million worth of away win that was for us, because it took us from about 16th to 11th.
All right.
And it's good. And Johnny Howson did his Maradona impression.
With that run, yeah, extraordinary. Extraordinary. I wonder which Maradona antic you were referring to. But
Air rifle.
Yeah. No, that brilliant. Applause for Mark Housey as well. Not something you see every day. Referee getting and as for Man City, not the way they expected to finish their season.
Although two great goals from Jack Rodwell, which might offer one some hope of progress next year. He's a definite prospect.
Yeah, there was about five goals in that game. Four of them were absolutely top class, and Grant Holt was just kind of bog standard Grant Holt. But yeah, it was a really entertaining game.
Right, and then you had your Chelsea Everton, and well, goodbyes are plenty there, Amy. End of an era for Everton. End of an era for Chelsea. The Chelsea fans with it, although there were one or two little signs for Rafa. But
did everyone read that Ian Ladyman article about Mancini in the Daily Mail?
I didn't read that.
Oh, right, yes. But then, he seems to have been incredibly unpopular with the players at City, and it just has sort of catalogues stuff from various unnamed insiders and lists various players he fell out with, and then there was an English clique in the dressing room who didn't like, took a ginnam after he dropped Joleon Lescott and had a go with Joe Hart. Actually, strangely, he appears to have ranted and raved at Joe Hart after that free kick. Samir Nasri, you know, ducked away from blocking. But, I mean, Mancini's getting a good shoeing now that he's left, which is probably a bit unfair, but it's interesting to hear the sort of dressing room politics.
Yeah, although it's a little bit unfortunate the way everyone's rushing to the kit man, for example, airing his the dirty.
Well, at least the kit man did it. He was happy to put his name to the criticism, unlike many others who aren't.
Now, Chelsea Everton tick. Oh yeah, big managerial merry-go-round. Brackets TM coaching carousel. Spinning thing with gaffers on, whatever you want to call it, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
It's already out there and a spinning.
And a spinning. Which moves in particular are you?
Well,
talking about
you've
here?
Got your Mancini's out, yep. So there's that big vacancy, that yawning chasm at City. You've got the Chelsea and Everton paradigm, and of course Ancelotti's kicked start a lot of this, continentally speaking, by saying no PSG, no. Je vais au Real.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the thing about there's no carousel, but there are lots of people waiting to step into vacancies.
Is it like a big clock, a big continental clock, and these cogs go round and
yes,
they make little cogs?
That's it. Turn. That's what it is.
Should we turn to the man who's watching all of this with great interest? It is Sid Lowe in Madrid.
Hello, Jimbo. How you doing?
I'm all right. You sound bright and breezy.
It's quite a nice Monday for me.
Is it like Armistice Day for you? You've got another week of the season to go, haven't you? Or two?
Yeah, I've got 2 weeks to go.
Wow.
It was brilliant. I was watching TVE on, I think it was last night, and they made a big song and dance about the Champions League, because obviously they've got the rights. The Champions League, the game that closes the season.
Yeah.
Hang on a minute. Yeah. It doesn't close our season, does it? But today's quite a nice day for me because of the Eurovision and the cup final being moved to Friday and me writing my column on Saturday. I feel slightly liberated today because I haven't got the normal Monday headache.
Right, fantastic. But in many ways, Sid, we're all kind of celebrating victory in Europe and that, and you're like the Japanese guy up in a jungle somewhere.
I mean, I have no idea what you're talking about.
The war's not over for you, Sid.
Oh, I see. Sorry.
But it will always be there.
The war never ends.
It never ends.
But next Monday,
if Spanish history has told us anything, the war doesn't actually end.
Yeah.
I have this vision next Monday, like Sid will be out just shouting his Spanish roundup into a hole in the ground.
I'm sure he'll find a broadcaster.
this is what the other thing that happens to me. This always makes me laugh. Is when I don't know if laugh is quite the right word or scream is a better one. I send the column through on a Monday, and of course I then get a sudden surge of out of the office auto replies, and just think, are you posers?
That's what they're doing now, Sid. Well, so much to talk to you about. We just mentioned Ancelotti. Declaring himself for Real Madrid, and PSG have declined his...
it's weird, this, isn't it? Because PSG's owner, whose name I'm not going to try and pronounce, but PSG's owner said about 10 days ago, I think it was, if Ancelotti wants to leave, there won't be a problem.
Hmm.
You know, we'll deal with that. It'll be fine. Don't worry about it. Now that Ancelotti actually says, yes, I want to leave, they're saying, ooh, you're not going anywhere, sunshine. In other words, he will go somewhere, but they'd probably quite like a little bit of cash for it.
Right, I see. And that place he'll go is Real Madrid, as he says. And Mou's gone now. And he got booked on... Well, he got sent off on Friday night.
You know, you never know for sure what people's intentions are, but I think Mourinho got the red card deliberately.
Right.
I think he looked for it. And yes, he was sent off, and he didn't go up to the it's effectively the front row of the director's box. But imagine the kind of Wembley steps; it's that kind of vibe. He didn't go up to get his medal afterwards. And the King of Spain sees Aitor Karanka coming up, who of course is Madrid's assistant manager, and turns to the guy next to him and says, "What? Do I give it to this guy?"
Amazing, isn't it? So tell us about Atletico, their first win in 26 attempts against Real Madrid.
Just a brilliant story. I mean, bear in mind, 1999, the last time they beat Real Madrid, that year they went down, so it was a little bit of an empty victory for them. They came back up to the first division, 25 games unable to beat Real Madrid in that time. Madrid had won the last 10. It had become increasingly easy for them. There was a huge sense of fatalism that I think weighed down on them. And then they go and do that. They win the Copa del Rey final, denying Madrid the chance to win anything this year, in Madrid Stadium, having gone 1-0 down and all that fatalism flooding back, do it with an extra time goal. It was a dirty, nasty, but extremely entertaining game. And Simeone said afterwards, you know what, if 14 years ago you'd said to Atletico Madrid fans, look, we're not going to win for 14 years, but when we do, it'll be like this. They'd have signed up for it.
Wow. 14 yellow cards in the game, Sid.
Yeah, honestly, it was. I mean, match reports for those who don't know are a nightmare anyway. But that game, it was hard enough just keeping up the yellow cards, let alone writing the match report at the same time. It was just insane. Two red cards in the end, both for Gabby and for Cristiano Ronaldo. Ronaldo sent off for seeming to kick out Gabby. I'm not entirely sure he actually caught him, but he sort of kicked towards Gabby's face. He'd actually taken out Juanfran a bit earlier, so maybe he hasn't too much to moan about. Except I felt a little sorry for Ronaldo, because the truth is they kicked lumps out of him most of the game. Mm. And he was increasingly losing his rag. But the goal, the equaliser from Atletico, is absolutely sensational from Diego Costa, but it's Falcao's setup that's brilliant. And it was just a great occasion to see the Bernabeu with 30,000 Atletico Madrid fans, really loud, fantastic atmosphere. And it's just a great story, I think.
All right, latest on Falcao, is there any?
Well, he said after the game that he didn't want to talk about his future, which is natural, and I can understand players sort of feeling at a moment like that. Like, oh, piss off, let me enjoy it for a bit. Yeah. He will go, of course. I must confess at this stage I don't know where that Monaco thing sort of doesn't properly go away, but nor do lots of other rumours. His buyout clause is €60 million, and that's a hell of a lot of money, but it's just about reachable, I think, for one or two of the bigger clubs.
Sid, some of the papers over here sort of insinuated yesterday that him going to Man City for £54 million is pretty much a done deal.
Yeah, well, I mean, as I say, that £54 million, that's essentially the €60 million of his clause. So if City are prepared to pay that, and if he was prepared to go, then Atletico Madrid not only could do nothing about it, would be really quite happy about that. The only thing Atletico don't want is for him to end up at Real Madrid.
Right. Will Simeone stick around?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Simeone will. And actually, it's a weird one, this, because, you know, the natural thing when a team who traditionally doesn't win anything, but that's not fair. Atletico have won two Europa Leagues in the last 4 years. But a team like this, we always talk about the team being dismantled. But actually, look at the Atletico team, and probably they'll only lose two players, and maybe not even that. Falcao will go. I suppose there's half a chance that Miranda will go.
Courtois?
And the other one, of course, is Courtois. Yeah, and Courtois, I spoke to him after the game on Friday night, and he thinks that if he's not going to be first choice at Chelsea, that it makes sense for him to stay where he is, because he's continuing to get experience. He'll get Champions League football next year. He's clearly progressing. He's winning things. He's very, very happy. And this was a debate he had with Chelsea last summer. Mm. And Chelsea wanted him to go to an English club to go on loan and get used to English football, which, as David De Gea found out, is very different. And he said no. Well, I didn't say no, but, you know, he persuaded them that it wasn't a good idea. And I think he's quite confident that his relationship with Chelsea is good enough that if they're in that position again, they will listen to him and that they will allow him to stay.
It does sound like he wants to spend his entire Chelsea career not playing at Chelsea, which is certainly one.
Well, I mean, this is it's about Petr Cech, though, and one of the nice things about Courtois, when you talk to him, he never says, you know, he never makes any comment along the lines of, well, I should be there and I should be playing. But he does say, look, I'll be honest, if I'm not going to play, it's better than I'm here, I am playing. And when Cech's name is brought up, he always says, well, he's a great goalie. I mean, what do you want me to do? Yeah. And I think he recognises that there isn't a hurry, because Cech obviously is of an age where Courtois will eventually get his chance. And in the meantime, he just doesn't want to stagnate. Personally, I think Chelsea would be pretty well served if they brought him back now. I think he's brilliant, and I think it won't be long before he's the best there is.
Brilliant. Okay, now, finally then, Sid, unless there's something else you want to throw our way.
Well, did you see the celebration of Barcelona's title?
Amy did.
Excruciatingly embarrassing moment with Alex Song.
Oh, yeah.
I felt so sorry for him.
Nothing more toe curling that you could imagine than having to watch that again and again and again.
Tell me about it.
Well, in a rather typically lovely moment when Barcelona were being awarded the trophy, Carles Puyol went over to get Eric Abidal and Villanova, who have obviously both had their seasons marked by cancer battles. And Alex Song was standing next to Abidal, and as Puyol wandered over with the trophy to get him, Song came forward thinking and virtually pushed Abidal out of the way, actually briefly for a fraction of time, and before he had to step back, you know, presumably wishing that the pitch would open up and swallow him.
Very unfortunate. And Tito, Sid, once again, question marks about whether the club are going to actually take a proper approach to this next year?
It depends what you mean by a proper approach. I mean, Barcelona are in a position where they want him to continue. He wants to continue. There's no reason for him to not continue except the health issue.
Well, yeah, that's a really, mighty big reason.
Yeah, exactly, which is, of course, really, really serious. And Barcelona, I think, at the very least, have to bear in mind and have to have some sort of idea of what they do if it's decided that he can't continue. And Donny Zubizarreta was talking last night, and he was asked about all the, you know, all the future transfers. Will Villa go? Who will come in? Is Neymar coming? And so on. And he, to go back to what Atletico Madrid players were saying, basically said, look, go on, bugger off. Let us enjoy this. You know, now's not the time. The one thing he would be drawn on, or sort of drawn on, was Tito Villanova. And it was, the interviewer started to ask about Villanova. He said, well, hang on. Who says Villanova's not going to be here next year? And I think that's indicative of the fact that the intention very much is that he will be there. But, of course, they have to be aware of what happens if he's not, and what happens if he can't continue. And of course, that's a really genuine issue.
Any chance, just Mourinho, that final blast from him in the press conference, this is the worst season of my life, a Super Cup semi-final, a run-up. For many coaches, that would be a good year. For me, it is the worst, etc. Any chance that Chelsea are finally going to wake up and just go, oh, my God, not... Do we really want all this all over again?
Well, when you say, is there any chance Chelsea are going to wake up, I suppose the question mark is there any chance that Abramovich will wake up and think that? And I suppose he's been slightly burnt by this before, so he may have a slight feeling of that.
But it's not Mourinho, a done deal, is it?
Well, a done deal in journalistic cliche, yes, it is a done deal.
Really?
A done deal legally, no, because it's not nailed down. But Mourinho agreed with Chelsea some time ago now. He's been trying to get players on board for some time now. He's been determined to go back for some time now. And Chelsea want him. And of course, in populist terms, he's exactly who Chelsea want in terms of what the fans think, in terms of the players. I suspect Abramovich would be entitled to believe that his relationship with Mourinho, even though it was perhaps occasionally difficult before, will be better than Mourinho's with Real Madrid. I mean, Mourinho came into very specific circumstances which were very different, which he simply hasn't managed to sit the control or to handle well in Spain. But he would, I think, believe that going to Chelsea would be different. And Mourinho's right, says this has been a failure of a season for him. It has. It wasn't that much of a ranty press conference, by the way. He had a bit of a go at one of the journalists, but it wasn't that much of a ranty one. It was short, which meant that some of the better questions couldn't be asked. But I suppose, as I say, Chelsea will feel, and Mourinho will feel, that it will be different than it was at Madrid. And I think it will be different to Spain. I think he hasn't enjoyed his time here in the way that he did elsewhere.
What question would you have asked? Do you think, what question did he not get asked that he should
have
been?
I mean, the question I would have asked, I wanted to know about about what happened when he got sent off, not just why he got sent off, but also then what happens. He goes to the dressing room. Who's running the team at that stage? Who decides on the three immediate substitutions? Why does he then not go to pick up his medal? Is that because, having been sent off, he thinks he shouldn't, because he doesn't want to, because he doesn't fancy it? I mean, those kind of questions weren't really looked into, partly because Mourinho's press conferences have been very, very short of late.
All right, then. Well, listen, enjoy your newly liberated Monday, Sid.
Well, I'm working, just not on the column. So,
all right, okay, cool. Yeah. Well, have a super one. We'll try and catch up with you before the season end, eh? Maybe on Thursday.
Oh, we've got 3 weeks for it.
Well, you have. Yeah. Anyway, nice one. Thanks ever so much, right. Sid.
Cheerio.
Wow, bumper edition of the Sidster there. Just time to tell you that, hey, Portugal, you remember? Yeah, and Benfica, they had a big 3-1 win on the final, but it didn't matter because Porto. So they held on.
Porto. How much did Porto win by?
They won, I think, 2-0. Oh. Yeah, so they finished the point clear. Yeah, just clear that one up.
Poor old Benfica.
Well, you know, another team with the Europa League campaign and derailing their live. Well, domestic hopes, I don't know. Anyway, that's it for part two. Very, very shortly, playoff fun and games and the extraordinary finales of the Serie A season.
This week on the Guardian Audio Edition.
Tracy McVeigh writes about the fury at corporate tax avoidance. Robin McKee investigates the medical potential of cloning cells from our own DNA, Zahn Brooks in Cannes meets director Baz Luhrmann, and in our audiobook review, we celebrate 50 years since the publication of Richard Feynman's Lectures on Physics.
To subscribe for free to the Guardian audio edition, go to audible.co.uk/Guardian or find us on SoundCloud, iTunes and Audioboo. The Guardian audio edition, a new way to get the whole picture.
Right, playoff news. Still waiting for the championship playoff to be decided, but in the meantime, we've had League Two and League One. League Two, Barry?
Bradford won the playoff final and go up to League One. Great. And no more than they deserve after a long, arduous 64-game season, I think it was. I think Chelsea are the only team who played more games than them this season. And Bradford also got to the Capital One Cup final. I still can never remember what that's called and have to think about it. Where they were beaten by Swansea and didn't really do themselves justice in the Capital One final. So, yeah, hats off to them. But their achievement kind of palls into insignificance with the results of the League One playoff final.
Speaking of Paul, he's got a point to make, actually.
Yeah, I just have a friend who's from Bradford and is a Bradford supporter, and you know that Northampton, who they beat 3-0, they're called the Cobblers.
Yeah.
So apparently the Bradford fans were singing at the Northampton fans, "You're just a town full of lacists."
That's brilliant, isn't it? Tell you what, sometimes you despair. A football supporter.
And then a thing like that pops up and your faith is restored.
Mm. Hey, Yeovil, what were they singing as they took on Brentford at Wembley?
Well, they devoted the 7th minute of the game to chanting the name of Adam Stanfield, who used to play for them and sadly died of cancer in 2010. I've had a soft spot for Yeovil ever since the London branch of their sports club asked me to compare a charity evening to raise money for
what
the...
What can they have been thinking of?
I'd say I was very low down the list. You were probably asked.
I wasn't asked.
Okay.
Anyway, so how did it go? What was this?
What?
What was your fundraising night?
It was just a big booze up for the... Right.
How many London members...
Capital Glovers. We wedged the function room below a pub somewhere. I can't remember where it was, but the loads of supporters of other teams came along too. Torquay, Exeter, AFC Wimbledon. It was a great night, very enjoyable. I was quite nervous before because I hadn't done that sort of thing in a long time, but it went quite well and we raised like a couple of grand, I think, for charity. Not that I like to talk about my many, many good works for charity.
Right. Okay, anyway, so you've had a soft spot for the Glovers.
Yeah, and I mean, they're a tiny club. Someone noticed today, I think it was James Darrett, made the point, their entire wage budget for a season is less than Christopher Samba's annual salary at QPR.
Wow. It's quite substantial, that, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's £1 million.
But when we're talking those kind of comparisons, we have to also bear in mind the annual wage bill of Newcastle set against the annual subscription for Kath, the tea lady, and her Sky subscription.
No? So we didn't mention that earlier.
We didn't mention that, and I thought that was a worthy story of mentioning.
I don't even know what this story is.
Okay, Mike Ashley apparently offered a £1 million bonus to Newcastle for winning the one-off game that didn't actually affect Newcastle against Arsenal, which would coincidentally help Spurs to have qualified for the Champions League, and apparently Mike Ashley has a soft spot for Spurs. But this £1 million bonus for this game wasn't actually offered to the players, but to all the backroom staff of Newcastle.
So
the players had to win to get the backroom staff to get this windfall. Because obviously there was a reasonable chance that this wasn't going to work out. Mm. And Kath, the tea lady, was interviewed before the game on Sky, and they asked her what the money would be spent on if she got this little bonus. And
what
she
would
said
her it, cut be? How many backroom staff are we talking
about? See, it was going to be divvied up according to years of service.
Oh, no.
And the tea lady had been there 50 years. She's lovely. Apparently, she's a lovely woman. She works in the media room in St. James Park. I've never been there.
Ian McIntosh was tweeting about that.
McIntosh said she was lovely, lovely woman and a legend, a club legend at Newcastle. So, she probably would have got more than anyone else.
Right, and she then mentioned something about a Sky TV subscription?
Yeah, that she'd never had one before. Ooh. And if the players won, she was going to take out a Sky subscription. But in the Sky studios, Gary Neville and Jamie Redknapp were incredibly dismissive of this. They seemed to think it was a very vulgar gesture by Mike Ashley, and that he shouldn't have made the announcement public. But I think by making the announcement public, perhaps he should now shell out £1 million.
Well, yeah, or Sky could go, well, you know what, we'll give her a subscription anyway. Yeah. I think maybe you needed to make it public just to give the players that extra impetus.
But would the players try harder for money that isn't going to go to them?
They wouldn't. And Alan Pardew as well.
No, but they did look like they were trying harder than they tried in their previous two games, that's true. To be fair.
But Alan Pardew didn't seem to be that bothered about winning the game. He kept taking off their players. And putting other ones on, to be fair. But
he was also insisting that they all get up for the last 4 or 5 minutes in hope of getting an equaliser.
Well, that's a shame. Hopefully someone somewhere, you know, when these cases come to the kind of in the media spotlight, there's usually a benefactor who steps in. What's one of our listeners might work at a Sky call centre. Right, okay, good. Yeovil.
Sorry, yeah, back to Yeovil. We've wandered off the point again. Poor old Yeovil. It's a fantastic achievement. Like, they're one promotion away from the Premier League. This is a tiny club in a tiny...
How small, Barry?
Well, they're a tiny club. Their average gate is 4,000, which is, I think, less than half the average Championship attendance. They work off a tiny budget. Their manager, Gary Johnson, he originally sort of marched them into... I just snapped
the stress of trying
to come up with interesting things to say about Yeovil.
That's okay. But
they're from a small town, 40,000 population, and it'll be probably a struggle for them to stay in the Championship, but who knows what might happen.
Ian Botham used to play for them, didn't he?
No, that was Scunthorpe.
I believe he played for Yeovil, didn't he? Or is he just a Yeovil fan?
I don't know.
Can you Google that, Matt?
And, I think you get nice cider there at half-time.
Well, you'd hope so.
At Hoosh Park.
Somebody wrote in...
Oh, yeah.
...about Aloe Athletic as well.
Ah, there was a mention of this. Go
Aloe
on, tell
Athletic
us.
Back-to-back promotions from Scottish Div 3, Div 2, now into Div 1.
Right.
With Paul Hartley, the old Hearts and Celtic midfielder with a nice little beard before the beards were fashionable.
Okay.
In charge.
Oh, okay.
One to look out for.
Where have they got to now?
They're now up into the Scottish First, so one below the Premier League.
All right. Sub-editor's dream, Aloha.
Aloha, Aloha.
Yeah, absolutely. And yes, it was Yeovil that Ian... And then Scunthorpe.
Oh, okay. I stand corrected.
Well, there you go.
Once again.
All right. Well, there's nothing else for it. We'll have to do Italy now, Amy. We'll have to do Italy. Little bit of a scene set here. As in many places around Europe, the final day was all about the last Champions League spot, and you had Milan, who were 2 points clear of Fiorentina. Both teams were facing sides that had already been relegated. Milan were at Siena, Fiorentina were at Pescara. And Siena, who were hosting, as I say, Milan, had lost their previous five games, scoring a grand total of one goal. And they were playing a reserve side largely, and they couldn't be... You figured they couldn't be bothered, really. Milan had beaten them on their last... 8 clashes, so it looked like a done deal. Milan start like gangbusters, but naturally, this being Serie A, the land of drama and unexpected, well, I was going to say unexpected surprises, but that's pretty much what a surprise is. Drama and surprises. It was Siena who scored, and Milan just couldn't look completely bewildered at this point. It all started to go very, very wrong. Meanwhile, over at Pescara, Fiorentina were already 3-0 up by this point, and absolutely cruising, tearing Pescara apart with Adam Ljajic with a hat-trick. I think he's got a touch of the Paolo Maldini, so maybe even a little bit better looking than Paolo.
Not possible.
I think it is. So the half-time comes and Milan are losing 1-0 at Siena and Pescara 3-0. Pescara are largely doing a we're in the Champions League celebration. They look a little bit like Arsenal up at St James's at the final whistle, but there's still 45 minutes to play. But, of course, then you saw at the end of this, with about 10 to go, they were still... Ambrosini gets sent off, and it really looks like... But then the referee sends off a Siena player, and then they get the penalty. And then at that point, you think, no, I know how this is going to end
up. It was such inevitability, especially with Balotelli taking the penalty.
But until that point, it did really look like Milan had one of the most colossal bottles ever.
Plus, the look on Galliani's face when Siena scored was just magic.
Mm. Anyway, so then it was 1-1, and then Mexes
of all people
breaks
arrived.
Hearts.
Yeah.
And the scenes at Fiorentina as Montella, who's another, I have to say, I don't know, you might not like the way this conversation's heading, but Montella.
I know where you're going here.
I've always had a bit of a thing for Montella. And he was very, very classy, I thought. And I hope he's still going to be at Fiorentina last year, because they went from last season, absolute shambles, Fiorentina, risk relegation even, this year... Fourth place, almost made it into the Champions League. It would have been great to see them in there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's going to be a case of not only whether Montella stays, but also can they keep that team together?
Yeah, especially Lige. But they've been just fantastic this year, Fiorentina, and they'll be in the Europa League along with Udinese, who destroyed Inter at the San Siro. Inter's 16th defeat of the season, so that's not far off half their games they've lost this year. And Stramaccioni and also Marco Branca are out, apparently, which I think is probably about time, but then there you go. Anyway, so disastrous stuff for Inter, and well, managerial merry-go-round, because Montella's been mentioned in conjunction with well, all sorts of jobs, but also the Napoli job, because Walter Mazzarri's said he's definitely not going to be there anymore. They lost at Roma, and Benitez has been mentioned there for the Napoli job.
I was just going to ask you about that. Yeah. How serious is that?
Well, I think it is serious, actually. I mean, he also has been made comments about, I miss Italy and that, which are, I think that managers generally say that when they're asked the question by media from said whichever country it is. But, yeah, I could see that happening. And they're in the Champions League as well, so that's certainly going to be attractive. Anyway, was there anything else about... the Fiorentina game. I didn't mention this. Giuseppe Rossi finally came back. It was only the last, 10, 15 minutes or so. But just to see him back on the football field after so long, over a year, I think, out of the game.
I believe so, yeah.
It's fantastic. Lovely chap. One of Sid's best mates, actually. I'm sure Sid was made up about that. Right, well, that's Italy, anyway. And there's still the Coppa Italia final, of course, to come.
Who's in that?
Roma and Lazio.
Oh, okay.
And that's both teams are out of the European picture, so one of those two will get into the Europa League that way. Paul, you're not going to be with us on Thursday when I think we might do a little bit of a season-ending Do You Remember When? / Winners and Losers, Highlights, Lowlights thing.
When?
Do you remember?
Making love on the floor in Belsize Park.
Do you remember?
There's something in the dark.
Didn't I break your heart
and you broke mine?
Kaylee.
Anyway.
So anyway, you were...
Yeah, your highlights and lowlights, which you might just want to revise after that little song burst from Barry. But Paul McGuinness.
Yeah, well, I was struggling for this feature because it was a little bit indistinct until the last couple of weeks when everybody retired. Ah. And I thought that was probably my highlight. It was just it was an epochal moment.
Clearing out the dead.
Yeah, it's at the end of, not just, Fergie being the most massive one by far, but that generation of England players as well, all retiring. I think it's a big thing.
Is that a highlight or a lowlight, though? That's a highlight.
I think it's a highlight because it marks out this season as being something different, because everything else was resolved very early and was rather... We beat Manchester United. That was great.
And City.
And City and Arsenal and knocked Spurs out of the cup and beat Everton.
Right.
That was all right. And I really like this kind of new thing of the strikers who are massive, like units, but can play and run very fast as well. So I really liked Benteke and I really liked Lukaku this season.
Right, okay, cool. Amy, you might not be with us on Thursday either. Do you have anything of that ilk?
I think it's hard to beat Wigan winning the FA Cup late on, to be honest, as a highlight. That's definitely up there.
I was gutted when Fiorentina didn't make it to the Champions League.
Chelsea's complaint against Mark Clattenburg.
Yeah.
I think one of my highlights, actually, was that, just because I think it was important and quite interesting, was when Kevin Prince-Boateng left the pitch after the racist abuse of the friendly game against Pro Patria. I just felt that that was a big statement and hopefully something. And another highlight, and obviously it's a bit ridiculous, but the Suarez bite.
Yeah, that was brilliant,
wasn't
it?
It was just amazing, really.
Just on the subject of that thing, because Balotelli was then speaking about it this week and saying that he'd walk off if he had any more racist abuse, and the club, I think, had to say, well, actually, no, you don't, because we've got actually a regulation in place now, and you have to observe that, and the referee suspends or whatever. You can't just walk off the pitch arbitrarily.
Yeah, but you can. Well, I mean, the rules might be the rules, but if you choose to ignore those rules because you feel strongly about it, then good luck to you.
Interesting. Just going to mention that Milan, after this whole Milan-Fiorentina thing, they had to drive. They were at Siena, which is not so far from Fiorentina, or from Florence. They then got a coach back to Florence to get a special train back up to Milan, and I think around 30 or 40 Fiorentina fans waited for them. They're pretty upset because there was a lot of feeling that the penalty that they were given Milan was, very soft. And they kind of, the paper said that they kind of ambushed them as they got off the coach, and there was some shouts and some suggestions that, again, there were some unpleasant noises of a racial nature thrown that way. I don't know. I mean, it's certainly being told from that perspective at the moment, and Balotelli, and I think also Rubinho were very upset. But sorry, Barry.
Oh, no, I was just going to say Jamie Carragher It's probably worthy of a shout-out. I really, really wish that shot that he hit the post with yesterday had gone in.
Yeah. Now,
what a career-ending moment that would have been. And, yeah, I'm really looking forward to his punditry next year. Seems like a top bloke and a very knowledgeable fella. Although I do find it slightly hard to understand what he's saying sometimes. He's so scouse.
Can I just put that contrast between Scholes and Carragher both getting, you know, applauded off, you know, one club players applauded off by all their fans, and then seeing Michael Owen getting, you know, thanking the Stoke fans for that round of applause. And you could see he was absolutely gutted to be retiring, but I just felt really sorry for him. He looked quite lonely.
Mm. Well, so, you can enjoy his punditry again next season.
Yes.
So, yeah. Good. All right. Well, summer awaits. But before that, on Thursday, we'll be back with a special Football Weekly Extra looking forward with Rafael Honigstein to the Champions League final on Saturday. Do join us then. More highs and lows, perhaps, as well. In the meantime, many thanks to Paul McInnes, Amy Lawrence and Barry Glendening, and special guest producer Matt Hill. We'll be back on Thursday. Have a super time till then.